Now, just cast your mind back to election time. Is it an exciting time for sitting MHKs, or is it a time that most people dread?
I think it's a mixture. It's an exciting time while you're going to get re-elected. It's nice to get out and meet the people, but equally you don't know what response you're going to get. You've hoped you've done well, that you've worked hard for your constituents. I know I was always out at functions, so you'd see an awful lot of your constituents that way. But it's good to get their feedback on what you've achieved. I used to always put a letter out, maybe the year before, to let them know what had happened, what was going on, and what I plan to do for the future.
And electioneering is a word that tends to have a fairly bad reputation. What are your thoughts on MHKs and indeed ministers doing things perhaps subtly, maybe not so subtly, to collect some votes?
Well, I suppose the sad thing is the reality is in the last 12 months, very little gets done because you have backbenchers not wanting it to support anything that's contentious, which might damage their chances of getting re-elected. It might be right for the island long term, but it's not right for a backbencher's career short term. So you've got that scenario, which is a concern given the current state that I think the island is in at the moment and the world in general. They'll be going through their last manifestos, if they stood before, to see what they promise, what they hope to achieve, and then analyse what have they done compared with what they said they were going to do. And then they'll be getting sound bites from key constituents throughout their area to see what the feedback is, if they haven't already done that. And then they'll be planning what they want to say for going forward and how they intend to prove the lot of the people of the Isle of Man.
And for the Chief Minister, obviously you have first-hand experience of that. Trying to control and deliver on any remaining items in the last 12 months out of administration, does that become increasingly tricky? Because not only do you have backbenchers perhaps unwilling to support things, but also ministers will know full well that they're at the mercy of their constituents and perhaps less so of the Chief Minister.
Absolutely. The ministers, if they're standing again and want to get re-elected, they want to be able to tell a good story. They don't want anything too bad from a newsworthy point of view happening in the last 12 months. But equally, I think they should look upon it. It's a time to do more good for the island, to get things achieved, to improve the lot of the people in the last 12 months and show what they've been doing. You know, if they've worked hard in the previous 4 years, if they've moved legislation which has improved the lot of the people, then they should have a proud record. And I think as long as you explain things, that was one of the benefits for me personally of the COVID briefings that we did. We were able to speak directly to the people of the Isle of Man. Obviously, the media were then questioning us. We'd do our best to answer to the best of our capabilities, but the people could see for themselves, hear, listen, and decide whether they liked what you were doing. And sometimes if you've got a bad news story or something you want to move forward, that isn't necessarily going to be popular short term. I think if you explain it properly to the people, most people are reasonable and say, well, yeah, I don't really like this idea, but I can see why they're doing it. It's for the good of my children, the good of my grandchildren. So I don't think they should always be too frightened to support potentially short-term unpopular for long-term gain for the people of the island.
Something which you spoke about was MHKs will be looking through their previous manifestos if they already stood. Is it frustrating when you have stood on a manifesto and there are things which you see are quite visible that you can't actually get done in the next 12 months anymore?
Yes, I suppose sometimes you've worked on legislation that you want and to get through, and you have to prioritise the legislation that's left. What is the most important with the number of hours that the Attorney General's Chamber can give you to draft that legislation? So there is one piece of legislation which I was very upset that I couldn't get through at the end of my term. That was capacity for people mental capacity to make decisions. That was an area that I felt needed improving. So there will always be something that you haven't got done. I think the administration I worked in, we probably set the record for the most pieces of legislation changed. So I can't complain too much, but it's there's always something you feel you should have got done in your time.
And do you think some people perhaps bite off more than they can chew with their manifestos? Because it's so easy for me to sit here and use all the buzzwords. I can say, yes, we'll fix the economy, we'll fix the health service, we'll get all the roads resurfaced, full-length horse tram, build thousands of houses. I mean, it's a nice idea, but without costing it and having a plan in place, it's empty promises, is it not?
It is, and that's one area. I know I gave a talk to students at UCM about this very topic, and I said I wasn't particularly bothered about which political persuasion you came from, but that if someone came to your door promising the earth, you know, the key question was, how are you going to fund it and how are you going to get other MHKs to support your ideas of taking the island forward? Because, it, as you said, it's very easy to promise the earth, get the support of people, but you can't, if you're a one-trick pony, if you can't bring other MHKs with you, you're not going to achieve. You might be full of good intentions, but you're not going to be able to do it. So I think if a candidate comes to your door and they promise you the earth, if they've got a really good business plan that you feel, yes, that would work and they should have good support, then by all means, give them your support. But you know, we are in a very tight budgetary period in our island's history. And with, you know, what I see coming down the line, I think it's going to be hard just to hold on to what we've got, let alone promise additional funding.
That is one of the things from a chief minister's perspective, is when you are put in as the chief minister, you are effectively trying to govern a coalition, because you have so many different ministers, you have so many backbenchers, they've all got their own ideas, and you're trying to... It's kind of a consensus.
It is. It's consensus politics. Sometimes you could describe it as trying to herd cats. But, you know, I like to think I had a happy team in my Council of Ministers. We had people from all sides of the political divide, but tried my best to drive forward change and get things done. You don't always get exactly what you want, but it's compromise. It's knowing what your colleagues want from their viewpoint and then trying to work through a pathway that gets you to where you want to go, with maybe a couple of detours to bring as many of your colleagues with you and win the vote.
There's been a lot of discussion about how the chief minister should be elected, whether that should be publicly elected, whether obviously we've had some changes in the fact that a candidate can now put their own name forward for chief minister. Do you think anyone that intends to put their names forward should be upfront with the electorate from the beginning?
It's a tough one. First and foremost, I don't think the public should elect the chief minister. The chief minister has to have the support of a good majority of Timbled members. And if they haven't got that support, they're not going to get anything achieved. B, you could then argue that the chief minister is super powerful because he has all Ireland support rather than just the region that you're representing. So I think for those reasons, it has to be the MHKs. Now, regarding existing MHKs saying they're going to stand for chief minister, it's a tough one because they're automatically accused of being ambitious and all about them rather than their constituents, etc. So it's a tough one. I think if they don't, then I respect that they haven't put their names forward at the hustings that they may consider standing for chief minister. They then want to see who gets re-elected, because there could be a couple of red-hot favourites that lose their seats. And then all of a sudden, I know I was one of the few ministers re-elected, and as a result I personally felt you couldn't just come in from the backbenches and suddenly be chief minister, because there's so much impact to Isle of Man life that happens off island, the contacts and the work you have to do in Westminster to ensure that the island is well represented and isn't too impacted by what happens off island. That's all down to relationships. And for somebody new to start that process without having the experience of being a minister. I mean, obviously, if all the ministers get knocked out, then it's going to have to happen. But I know when I stood, it was because I was one of the few ministers surviving, and I felt I should put my name forward to help take the island forward.
Is ambition a bad thing in politics, or is it perceived to be bad?
Ambition is good in the private sector. It's very good. I think in politics it's good, but if you don't handle it correctly, you can be perceived to be arrogant and overstepping the mark. So it's a finely balanced position, really.
It's probably only a matter of time before we start to see the first declarations. A lot of people in 2021 were standing on recovering from COVID. What would you suspect are going to be the big talking points of this election?
Well, the key one that should be is income. How is the island going to fund its lifestyle? Its unique selling point from a business point of view is tax efficiency, low taxation. That's that was a good move. I don't discount that at all. But we are staring down the barrels of a significant reduction in revenue from the e-gaming sector. And as a result, and that's a high percentage of our economy. So I would hope that most candidates focus on that. How would they grow the economy to fund the health service, to fund our schools, to get the dental waiting lists down? Obviously, affordable housing for our young people is key. Everybody wants housing, but when the planners come up with suggestions of where it should go, then it's everywhere but not in the field opposite my house, sort of thing. So those are key issues. Obviously, migration, the population of the island, these are very emotive topics that people will want to know where political candidates stand for. But for me, it's how will you protect the economy and potentially grow it in the current climate? How are you going to replace some of the loss of GDP from e-gaming sector? What are your ideas? I mean, I know I've got ideas, but I'm not standing. So it'll be interesting to see what people come up with.
Would you ever stand?
I would hope not to. I would hope that in my old constituency of Middle, we get two good candidates that stand and are elected, and I can give my support behind the scenes in any way I can.
And I obviously don't know for certain, but there's probably a good chance that there'll be some candidates that we've never seen or heard from before. If you could offer them some advice from all of your years in Tynwald and on the inside, what should people be doing if they want to stand any chance whatsoever of claiming a seat?
Well, first and foremost, they've got to discuss it with their family, because you've got to have the support of your family behind you to do to be a good MHK. Then you've got to, if you're not already involved in the community, showing that you care and you want to help, you've got to get yourself out there. Obviously, you've got to get round. I had a really big landmass constituency and it took a while to get round everyone, but you've got to get out there, knock on the doors, introduce yourself. So maybe an introductory letter, just something brief stating who you are, what you stand for, and that you'll be coming out to expand on that to everyone. So finding people who take an interest in politics and who may be prepared to stand by your side whilst the counting is going on, or people are doing the voting, coming in to vote, and put a good word in for you, and maybe give you feedback from the community, from the sector they sort of represent, as to what people are thinking and want to happen.
We're hearing a lot about efficiencies and using artificial intelligence to try and grow GDP. Where do you see artificial intelligence?
Well, first of all, you have to look at the economy. All economies of countries I describe as an elevator. At the bottom of the elevator, you have new startups going up slightly, and then as they mature and they become midterm on the elevator, and they're expanding, they're good foundations in the island's economy. But then you get to the top of that sector or that elevator, and some of those sectors drop off they fade away. And I fear that one of our biggest performing sectors, which has been good to the island, whether you like or disapprove of the gaming sector, it has brought in a significant amount to the island's economy and helped pay the bills. And that sector is clearly coming to the end of the peak of the elevator and will be decreasing. How quick, we don't know. So what are you going to replace it with? Now, I would like to see more funding given to the Department for Enterprise to attract startup AI companies to the island, to grow their percentage on the island, to take up the slack from the e-gaming sector, which I see reducing. I mean, the Isle of Man e-gaming license was a phenomenal license, which enabled companies to trade their business around the world. Now, other companies are saying, if you want to have an e-gaming license, you have to set up in our country and go with our license. So all of a sudden, the license which we had on the island, which covered most of the world or enabled countries to work in most of the world, we've lost our unique selling point from that sector point of view. And this has happened in the last few years. And therefore, I hope that DfE, I've kept out of politics. I made a promise to myself that the previous Chief Minister, Alan Bell, left me alone for 5 years, didn't interfere. And I really appreciated that I was able to get on without having someone heckling all the time. And I made that promise that I would do the same to my replacement. But that is an area that I do have concerns, because it's very good people having well-intentioned ideas, but if you haven't got that income coming in, it doesn't matter. If you haven't got it in your pocket, you can't pay for it. And therefore, I would hope that one of the key elements of this election going forward is, how are we going to improve a certain sector's percentage of GDP whilst another is significantly reducing? I hope I'm wrong. I could be, but I don't think so. I think the writing's been on the wall now for 2-3 years. And we need to look at a new, expanding a startup sector, for want of a better word. And I think AI has got great potential, and we can attract new businesses with our taxation and maybe support for those companies setting up on the island. And maybe more needs to be done in the next 12 months to help that sector.
Just lastly, what would you say to the next Chief Minister? Because I've always thought it's one of those jobs where no amount of work experience will ever teach you what it's like to be in charge of a country.
Well, first and foremost, it's a great honour to represent your country. And I was incredibly proud and privileged to be the Chief Minister of the Isle of Man. It's also very stressful and very frightening at times, when I know I walked into a briefing and I was advised that within 3 months to expect 1,500 to 2,000 dead people from the Isle of Man at the start of COVID. Not one of the worst experiences of my life. So it can be very daunting, can be very rewarding. Laying a wreath at the cenotaph, the first Manxman to do that, probably one of the highlights of my life. So there's highs and lows. I think the Chief Minister has to be true to themselves, but also take time to explain to the people of the Isle of Man what you're doing, why you're doing it. They might not like what you're doing, but if you explain it, and that's one of the beauties of the briefings that I did with what was known as Howard O'Clock, is I was able to get our message over, whether people liked it or not. The fact that I could speak directly to people and explain to them what was going on, what we felt was the right way forward, and then at least people could make up their mind based on all the information rather than getting it secondhand and maybe missing out some of the salient points.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.